welcome to this week's Blind Like Me. It's Phil Parr, and this week we have two interviews for you. Both of these people lost their eyesight later on in life as they became adults or after they were adults. And both of the interesting thing about both of these interviews is we did both of these computer to computer on Skype. I don't know how long Skype has been around, and there are other telephone internet protocols, but Skype is the one we used. The sound quality, I think you're going to find, especially on the first one, is just exemplary, and we wanted you to know how we had done it. These people aren't here in my home. They're on Skype with their microphones at their computers. So anyway, after you hear it, you might want to go and rescue or get yourself a version of Skype. Here's today's Blind Like Me. Our guest today is a gentleman by the name of Robert McCoy. And, sir, how are you today?
I'm not too bad. And yourself?
Well, good. Now, you're up quite a bit east and north of me. Where are you located?
Just outside Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada.
New Brunswick, Canada. And that is, you know, I didn't realize that there are parts of Canada that are east of our Atlantic seaboard.
Yes.
I guess I'd forgotten my geography when I learned it as a child, under the tutelage of Miss Wynn at the Texas School for the Blind in Austin. I'd forgotten that. And with it, I guess it gets bitter cold up there?
Well, we get cold weather, yes. Certainly, you know, down, minus 20, minus 30 Fahrenheit. Probably 40 sometimes, minus 40, but that would be pretty much a max. Now, this winter we haven't gotten down that cold, minus 25 Fahrenheit perhaps.
Man, I would consider that just unbearably. Being a boy from Texas, I'm in Lufkin, Texas, which is 120 miles north of Houston, and it got down to 25 one night here, I think. That's about it for our winter. Anyway, are you a lifelong Canadian? Have you lived in that area all your life?
Yeah, I was born just about 8 miles from where I'm living right now, and actually my sister and I share 160 acres of the homestead.
Oh, yeah, the old home place.
Yep, my grandfather's homestead, yep.
Now, you began life as a normally, I hate to use the word normal, but as a sighted person. Is that correct?
That's correct. Till I was about, I was in my mid-30s. Well, I was 30 years old when I started having trouble, and 33 when I went totally blind.
And you didn't realize until 30 that you were going to have an eye problem. You were blissfully ignorant of that fact.
That's correct, yeah. No, I had 20/15 vision, better than 20/20, so, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And I think you said yesterday that your occupation at that, or during that portion of your life, you were a heavy equipment operator.
That's correct. I ran heavy forestry equipment. I did mechanic work and drove some truck on the road and that kind of stuff. Yeah. Yeah. Used to hop up my own cars and like to blast through the turns with those, and had my motorcycles and ATVs and all that stuff. Yep.
Just running wild and having a big time.
That's about it. Yeah, I had a good time.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. Folks are supposed to have a good time. That's what this session's on. It's what life's all about, as far as I'm concerned. You say you were 20 something when you realized what was the first indication? I mean, how did it manifest itself?
The first indication, I started having a lot of pain in my left eye and had no idea why. So I got my wife to take me to the hospital. Paining so bad, I couldn't even open my right eye. The water would just flow, and so she took me into the hospital. And the doctor looked at it, and they said, yeah, you've got some inflammation there, and we'll give you some drops, and that'll clear up, and that'll be it. And so they did that and went on, and it came back again. You know, a few months later, I got the inflammation again, and they did the same thing. And so but the third time, they started checking to see what might be causing the inflammation, but they could never find any problem or any reason for me to have the inflammation. And they did everything. I mean, they x-rayed my chest. I couldn't imagine why they were x-raying my chest for my eyes, you know. But anyway, they did the x-rays on the chest, and they did the blood work, and they sent me to, what they call them, a rheumatologist, the internal specialist, and all that kind of stuff, and nothing came up. So, but they could never pinpoint why I had this inflammation in the eyes. And then after a few years, it switched over to the right eye, and
And the left eye was okay at that time. I mean, you could still, it was still very usable vision.
Not well, by the time that the problem switched to the right eye, my left eye was pretty much shot by then, because every time the inflammation came back, there would be some swelling and glaucoma would go up a bit, and then it would burst some blood vessels in around the retina area, and that destroyed some of the vision, of course, each time. And then I started having trouble that way. And then, like I say, about 88 or so, it switched to the right eye.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, you say glaucoma, but they had not detected that glaucoma at this time.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I said glaucoma. I should not have said that. It was actually an elevated pressure in the eye.
Okay.
But it wasn't the disease glaucoma. I'm sorry.
Okay. And you realized at that time that we've got a problem here, kids. I'm losing my sight.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, but you know, the doctors held out hope right up until, about 89, I think, before they finally told me that there was nothing more they could do for me. Yeah, it was in 89, yeah.
There's nothing more we can do. You are going to end up totally blind.
Yeah, they told me that probably the best thing for me to do would be to contact CNIB, Canadian National Institute for the Blind, and he said there's nothing more we can do for you.
Well, that's a pretty stiff sentence for a 30-year-old, and I think you said you were 30, didn't you?
I 32 that year, and then in 90 I turned 33, and I was totally blind by 90, so, yeah.
And as I said, that's a pretty damning thing for a young bronken buck of 33 years old, somebody to tell him, hey, buddy, you're going to be blind the rest of your life, and there ain't nothing you can do about it, you know?
That's right, yeah. And I remember when it switched to the right eye, and that was quite traumatic, because at that point I began to think, hold it, you know, I'm blind in the left eye now, and it switched to the right eye. Chances are I'm going to be blind in that one. And where do I go from here? You know, like life's at an end is what I was thinking at that time.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we had a traditional family. I was a breadwinner, you know. My wife didn't work. She stayed home with our son. And how am I going to support them, you know, as a blind person? Had no idea. I thought blind people just sat around and twiddled their thumbs all the time. What a mistake.
Well, a lot of them do. But then, as you found out, a lot of them don't.
You've got that right.
And you thought of a death sentence. This is awful. I can't. What am I going to do? I'm sure, as one would think, some amount of depression, all the things that you'd think a 33-year-old guy would go through if they handed him that sentence.
Don't know if I had a lot of depression, but I did think about suicide because I had lots of insurances, right? And I figured if I could make it look like an accident, my wife would have the money.
Sure does take the guesswork out of dying, doesn't it?
Oh, it did, yeah.
The guy said, every day is just another day to figure out some reason not to commit suicide. That's terrible, isn't it? Anyway, I think I don't know a man that doesn't go through some period of time in his life when he thinks about suicide. Anyway, so you're 33, and you did contact CNIB, I suppose.
I went in. When the doctor told me that, I don't know if it was that day or the next day, we went in, and you know, I didn't know the techniques, and my wife's got a hold of my hand, and she kind of half leading me along, you know, and we went in, and they said, what do you want? I said, I want to get back to work. I said, I'm going blind, or I'm blind now. I said, I want to get back into the workforce. What do I do? They said, well, first thing you need to do is go and do some rehabilitation training, daily living skills, those types of things, and orientation and mobility. So I did they started doing the process, sent me off to Toronto. I went there for 12 weeks and did intensive O&M. Every day I was out on the streets for an hour, 2 hours a day.
Learned to wave that cane in front of you.
Yeah, learned that white cane, man. Yeah, that's the answer there. Yes,
yeah,
sir.
Yeah, it is. It is the answer. And it's not, as we were talking a while ago, it's not rocket science. It's something that a guy can do. If your white cane touches something, you need to stop.
You're right.
You're about to fall over something. If your white cane doesn't touch anything, you also same deal. You need to.
That's
hold
when
it.
I get scared. When it doesn't touch anything,
go down the steps. Well, you have to fall down a few steps, and then you realize it didn't kill you, and it's not so bad. Or if it happened to me now, it'd kill me. It was my age. Okay, so your career as a heavy equipment operator was over. That was history. No more of that. Motorcycle sold that motorcycle and all that kind of thing, I suppose. And
yeah, pretty near cried when I sold the bike. But anyway,
I would imagine you did, and I don't think anyone would blame you if you had.
8-year-old son. 8-year-old son was standing beside me saying, "Dad, can't we just keep it till I can drive it?" I said, "No, man, we can't.
we need the money, and I need rid of it. I don't want it around." And so you said, "Okay, I'm totally blind. I'm 33 years old. What am I going to do?" You obviously made some heavy decisions to be where you are now.
You got that right.
Tell us about them, if you don't mind.
Sure. After I did the orientation mobility, I came back to Fredericton. That was in 90. In 91, early 91, I started learning how to use a computer and the old Arctic Vision. Some people will know that. Long before JAWS, or DOS days.
Yeah.
And in the fall of 91, I started the university part-time, went quite a few years part-time, got my finished up my bachelor's, got my first degree, and then I went on and did my master's. Just at the end of the master's, I had been offered a job in Ottawa working for the Statistics Canada, but I got thinking my options over, and I said, I think I'll go on and do my PhD. So I'm working on my PhD, and now I'm teaching at a university, yeah.
And so that's what you're doing now. And I know you've given lots of thought to this. Would any of this have ever taken place had your eyes not failed?
Not a chance. I always wished that I had gone to university. Didn't think I was intelligent enough to do it. And I was wrapped up. You know, I had my life, and I had making darn good money and buying my own piece of equipment, going into business for myself. And there wasn't a chance I'd ever go to university.
Never would have happened.
Not a chance. But Linus pushed me in a way that I had never expected. And, wow, did I ever find out that anybody can do it at university. It doesn't take, you know, you don't have to be a real whiz kid to do it. Just a lot of hard work and get down and get dirty with it, and you can do it. I carry a 4.2 GPA at the graduate level.
Really? That's amazing. And did they teach you Braille or not?
I did learn Braille, but I find going blind later in life, I find that it just didn't have time to get fast at Braille. So I can read it, and I do read it. Like I read the National Geographic or Reader Digest, that kind of stuff. But for work, I use JAWS with speech because it's for me, it's fast. You know, you're reading it 320 words a minute. You can cover a lot of material fast.
It is such a computer has been. Of course, you've only been blind now for about 15 years, but what a liberating thing. Computers, as we say, they haven't leveled the playing field, but they sure have made life a lot better for blind people.
Really, yes.
There's just no question about that. Reading with speech, I'm not a Braille reader, and I've been blind all my life, and I'm one of those who just couldn't. I mean, it just wasn't in the cards. I just couldn't do it. I'm consider myself reasonably intelligent. I can walk and chew gum. At the same time, I just couldn't get that Braille. So you, what are your degrees in? What is your chosen field of study?
Sociology. I'm specializing more in disruption of identity for people who incur a blindness later in life. Or mm-hmm. disability in later in life, people who have established their identity in the workplace, and then if they become disabled and lose that place of work, mm-hmm. Oftentimes it upsets their identity dramatically, and it's wiped out. For example, I was a truck driver, I was a heavy equipment operator, I was a mechanic, I was a motorcycle driver, an ATV driver. All that was gone when I went blind. Just bang, I was gone. That was gone. My identity was gone. And what I'm looking at is people who experience that, and then they reshape their identity after this disability sets in. And what does that identity actually look like? You know, is it different than what it was? Have they retained significant parts of that past identity? How do they go about reconstructing that new identity? So those are the things that I'm interested in.
And your wife, you were married to the lady that you're married to now before your blindness.
That's correct.
And so she knew you as a fully functional sighted person, and now she knows you as a fully functional blind person.
Exactly.
It would be interesting to hear her input on the changes, and I'm sure there would be many in you as a person since you now are a functioning blind person.
If she would talk about it publicly, but she won't. And I think the other thing is, there hasn't been a lot of change. You know, like I still do, well, actually, I do more now than I ever did before because I do carpentry work. I never did carpentry work before. You know, my roof had 3 feet of snow on it here 1 year, and I was up shoveling that off, and her mom called and said, whatever you do, don't let Bobby up on that roof.
And you went up there and did it.
Oh, yeah, I was up, yeah, not a problem.
Yeah. But you say that as a sighted person, you probably wouldn't have done that?
Yeah, I would have did that part, but the carpentry work, I'd be a little bit more leery of doing it. You know, we took on a job of refurbishing our steps here a couple of years ago, and we stripped the carpet off and put hardwood on it, built our own treads and built our own kick plates and all that stuff. I still do mechanic work. You know, I do electrical work. I don't do plumbing because my son's a plumber, so I don't have to do that.
Oh, what a wonderful thing. What a wonderful thing to have a son that's a plumber. It's just, you know, that's great. One of my stories today, I was telling a guy a while ago, my wife is an attorney.
Yep.
And we had a guy come in that wanted to get a divorce and wanted custody of his children. So I've got $5,000 worth of plumbing stuff that I can draw on for the next 5, 8, 10 years because we're letting him trade it out. We're doing his divorce and getting him custody, and he's doing plumbing work for us. And it's just wonderful because I hate plumbing. I hate it. I've done a lot of it, but I hate it. It just seems like every time I get in plumbing, you fool with it a while, and then you call somebody.
Yeah.
But you have tried working with mechanic tools again since you can't see.
Oh yeah. No, I've changed oil. I've put shocks on vehicles. I do my own brakes and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, yeah. One of my goals is, as soon as I can afford it, is to get myself an older vehicle. I'd like to get about a '57 Chevy or something like that,
and restore it.
Tear it right down to nothing, and then start and rebuild it right from bottom up. Build a nice little sleeper, eh?
There's no reason why you can't do that, and I don't know if there's a list of blind people who do that, but we've interviewed two or three on our Blind Handyman show that we interviewed one guy who works as a mechanic in a garage, and this is what he does for a living I'm thinking in North Dakota, but if you're interested, I'll try to locate maybe some other people who've done some of that. But you never had tackled the carpentry work that you're doing now.
No, nothing like I'm doing now, no. I don't think I would have tackled it, you know. Those steps that we build are pretty formable. That's quite a task because you go up 4 steps and then you go around 4 pies to get to the next swing, and then you go on at a 90-degree angle and then you go on up 5 steps to get up to the main level.
Okay.
Not an easy job.
So you tore all that out, all the old out, and built new.
No, I tore the. I had built the original steps myself, roughed them in and everything, I had carpet on them. So I ripped all the carpet off, but I built all new hardwood treads, and put hardwood treads on there, and I built the hardwood kick plates and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, trimmed it out in the end, you know.
And you don't have the talking measuring tape. You're using an old Braille. A Braille tape.
Between the Braille and my wife,
she did
measuring for me, yeah.
Oh, it's okay to have. I take all the sighted help I can get. I'm not so independent. I think, you know, if somebody wants to help me, I'll let them.
I don't. I take to a certain degree, but oftentimes I'll refuse help. I say, no, I can do this alone, so I'll do this, and then when I really need help, I'll ask for it, because that way they don't get bored with it. You know, they don't, geez, he just, you know, he's taking advantage of me or whatever, you know.
Well, yeah, I do that, but, I mean, I don't mind being, my classic joke is my wife's going to help me do this, and that's not going to slow me down too much.
Yeah, yeah.
She doesn't think that's too funny, but anyway.
Well, my wife likes doing it. She likes doing carpenter work, too.
Does she?
So, yeah, she likes getting in there, and she don't like running the saws and stuff. She won't touch that. But and when I was getting real close to the blade, like doing some of the fancier stuff, I just told her to go away because she'd reach out and touch me, and that would, of course, break your concentration.
And that's not what you need. You need to be alone with that saw.
That's right.
My first one I bought, my wife said, you can't do anything with it unless I'm here. And so one morning about 3:30, I woke her up and said, baby, I'm going to cut some picnic tables. You won't get up and watch me? And she said, no, just be careful. You know, so that, that ended that. Now I can do anything I want to with my saws. Let's talk about the university where you are a lecturer at this university, or you are a professor, or what is your role there?
I have a full course load, the same as any professor, but because I don't have my doctorate, they call me a lecturer.
But I do the same thing that a professor does. I design my own course. I teach it. I do the evaluation of the students. You know, I do the testing, the set up the evaluative procedures, i.e. the assignments they have to submit. I mark all those. And yeah. So I basically, you do exactly the same thing that any professor would do. But because I don't have a doctorate, I'm classified as a lecturer.
But you will have a doctorate.
I will.
You're working on getting that. Are you working on that at the university where you're lecturing?
No. There's two campuses that the only thing that separates them is a street that runs up between them, and they actually share a lot of the facilities, like computing and library and that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
And I'm doing my degree at the University of New Brunswick, but I'm teaching at St. Thomas University.
Uh-huh. Are they going to hire you as a full-time professor when you get your doctorate?
Who knows? There's no promises that way at all. As a matter of fact, I don't really even have work lined up for next year any more than they did implement a course that I can teach this summer. But as far as a full course load next year, I don't have. I applied for a 9-month term position, limited term position, and ended up getting that for this year. Now next year, there's always hope.
But you're thinking that they might. That's sort of the plan, is that they're going to hire you full time.
Eventually, yes, I would like to see that done. Yes, never can make. You can never say, because they're all cutting back.
I know. Yeah.
Population's shrinking, and they say, oh, we got to shave budgets. But anyway, so who knows? But yeah, I'm certainly hopeful.
Now you say your degrees are in sociology. I'm a little cloudy on exactly what that means. You're concentrating on the identities of people who lose their vision or incur some handicap later in life. Is that what you're lecturing on?
No, actually, I'm doing two introductory to sociology courses and one social inequality course. And in the summer, I'm going to be teaching what's called sociology of the body, and it looks at the body and society. With regard to identity, it's that social construction of identity that I'm interested in. Yeah, and how people interpret their identity within society.
What is your plan? Is to write some dissertations on this, or write a book about this, or what do you plan to do with this knowledge that you're gaining?
Definitely will be a dissertation written on it, and then hopefully I can convert that into a book. Yes.
Okay. Sounds like your life is pretty well on track. What else is going on? You involved in church, or you're involved in? You don't play golf, that's for sure.
Well, no. There are a number of blind people who do play golf, but I don't.
I interviewed a guy a couple of years ago from the National Blind Golfers Association.
Really? Didn't know there was one of those.
Yeah, well, there is here in the States, and they go around and play kind of mock tournaments to raise money for charities and things like that. I forget this guy's name, but he was a golf pro, I think, before he lost his eyesight, and he's converted it into, I don't know if he's able to make a living doing it, but he sounded like he was having an awful good time. Like I said, and your son is grown.
Yes.
So, and he's a plumber, and that just leaves you and your wife at home. I guess she had to probably go back in the workplace when this happened.
Well, she works part-time at a convenience store. She works 12 hours a week right now.
Yeah.
I've pretty much been able to support us through scholarships and bursaries and that stuff through the university. And I did get what was called Canada Pension here, so that kept me going for a while. You asked if I was busy in other things. We attend church, and we're busy with our granddaughter now. We have a 15-month-old granddaughter.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm chair of what's called our Local Service District Advisory Committee. Outside of the urban areas here, we have, in New Brunswick, we have what are called local service districts. They're segments of the province that are broken up into service districts. And each one of those service districts has an advisory committee, or some of them don't, but many of them do. Ours has a committee, what's called, we're voluntary, but we get together and we discuss issues like some of the things that would be affected by taxation, i.e. streetlights and garbage pickup and fire department and voluntary fire mm-hmm. department, that kind of stuff. So we kind of assist in advising the government on what we feel should be done in those areas. Recreation is another one. Right now we're dealing with the city of Fredericton trying to negotiate a deal around purchasing recreation services from the city. And, of course, they're trying to get the most bucks they can get out of us,
sure.
and we're trying to get the best deal for our citizens that we can, you know,
yeah.
keep the price down as far as possible. So, yeah, we're engaged in that kind of stuff. It's kind of like a stripped-down city council.
Yeah.
Any more than we don't have all of the tax-setting authorities and that type of stuff that a city council would have. We do make recommendations towards those things, but we don't have... And planning is another thing. Planning with regard to development for the area is another thing that we're engaged in.
How did you get this position? Is it elected, or how did you obtain that?
Well, they tried to... They were going to implement a rural plan in this area for development that many of us did not like. And we set up a meeting and we disagreed with it. We didn't want it. And we had enough people voice their disagreement with it that it finally got through out and before it actually became law. And when it was thrown out, the existing committee quit. So I went to a meeting one night. We were setting up a committee to assess the plan mm-hmm. and redevelop it into something that would be more acceptable to the people in the area. And at that meeting, they decided they were going to vote on a new local service district advisory committee.
And someone
suggested that I take it, so I was nominated. And like an idiot, I said, "Yeah, go ahead, I'll do it." And I've been here for, I think, since 2001 or 2002, something like that. I've been on it. So,
did they want to do that you disagreed vehemently with?
The plan was good for a city, but we're rural. You know, we're rural folk. We're country folk, and we wanted more leeway on what we could do on our property. You know, we didn't want someone to tell us that we could only put certain side building at a certain place on our property.
Yeah,
you know?
I got you.
You know, I got 160 acres here, or 80 acres of my own. I guess my sister, she got 80 acres. You know, we want to put a building out there. We want to do it, you know. So
yeah.
Back off. Give us some leeway. The plan was too tight, you know, just too much urbanized, and we're too rural, you know. If somebody wants to set up a mill in our area, by all means, go ahead. You know, if you want to set up a small portable sawmill, if you've got the property to do it, you're not going to be bugging the neighbors, then, hey, go for it.
Yeah, unless it's polluting, why does anybody care, you know?
Precisely. And that's what we've built into the new plan is look to the environment, look to the neighbors, make sure that the neighbors aren't going to be harmed in any way, you know. And if the environment and the neighbors are okay and it's not unsightly, that kind of stuff, then sure, go for it.
What was the reasoning behind these other folks wanting to implement these tight restrictions? Have you discerned that yet?
Well, I talked to some of the people on the original advisory committee, and they developed a set of guidelines that they wanted to see implemented. And it went away to a government planner who was a city dweller, as far as I can tell. He never, ever lived in the country, and he crafted this plan. Well, when he sent it back to them, it was nothing like they wanted. But it gained some support in the community by the committee, the Local Service District Advisory Committee, and they were going to push it through.
Uh-huh.
Well, some of us found out about it, and, man, we fought it. Even some of the people that was on the original committee fought it. And so now we've got a new planner who actually grew up in the country, and he's working with us trying to get this plan shaped up to something that he knows the country people would accept, and it builds in some protection, but it also builds in a fair bit of decision making on the individuals, the property owner. You know, they
yeah.
have a fair bit of leeway. Yeah.
Okay, so you have 100. Between you and your sister, you have, what do you say, 180 acres?
180, yeah.
180 acres.
160, sorry.
160. So you've got 80 acres that's yours.
That's right.
I mean, you two share this, so you haven't drawn boundaries or anything, right?
That's correct.
Now, what do you do on that 80 acres? Is it in timber, or is it what is it like?
It's just natural. Is it growing? Yeah, timber. There's lumber growing on it, and it was cut hard back in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
But it's coming back good now. There's starting to grow back pretty good now, and now we just let it grow.
So it was clear-cut.
I mow too much of it, but...
It was clear-cut back in the 80s.
Yeah, we clear-cut it, yeah, in the 80s, yeah.
Now, you That's say right. you mow too much of it. Does that mean you do the mowing yourself?
I use a push mower. My wife uses a ride-on because we're mowing about... well, with push mowers, it takes two people about 4 hours. Two push mowers. So my uncle and I bought a ride on between us. He's got a his backyard and my backyard are they meet, and we do the mowing. Yeah, and my wife she does the ride on. Takes her about an hour to an hour and a half to mow with the ride on. I do all the cleanup. I do around the house and the buildings and the flower gardens and the side hill and all that stuff with the push mower.
Now, by push mower, you mean a powered mower with a motor and a blade that you just walk behind?
Yeah, one of those babies, yeah.
Okay, because when I was a kid, a push mower was a mower that... This mower didn't have any...
Oh, no way.
you ever seen one of those?
Yeah.
My old daddy mowed that lawn with that thing, and of course I had to get out and show him I could do the same thing. My mother would sit on the front porch and, Philip, you've missed a spot over here to your left a little, and so I mowed the lawn. I thought that was a great thing for a blind kid to be able to mow his own lawn. So you do the places where you can hear and that you're familiar with, whereas your wife can cut a pasture and just be out there in the open where she can't. You know, because you got to hear, in order to get around as a blind person, you got to hear, bounce your echo off something.
Well, that, plus I, every place I do has a border. You know, like I've got the building, I've got my house, I've got the shrubbery around the flower gardens. We've got the curbing, I put that down, and around, over the ditch area that I do is, you know, it's all bank. I know she can't get up and down that with the push or with the ride on, so yeah. I do the heavier stuff there and down the ditch, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Have you thought about an electric mower that would be silent?
Not a chance. Like it's too far to string cords and cables. You know, like we got a big chunk of ground here, man. You know, like we're mowing about an acre and a half, and some of the stuff that I do is like would be over 100 feet away from the house, and I don't want that stinking power cord running over that.
I think you can buy them now that you charge and run a while.
Oh, yeah, but you'd have to charge it, I think, up three or four times, do this size.
You'd have to charge it up a good bit, but it'd be quiet. It wouldn't, because the noise of the power mower would bother your sense of direction or would inhibit your ability to get around.
Well, no. Everything I do is like I say, it's bordered or it's side hill, right? And it's quite significant side hill, so you go by that. Yeah, I go by feel, not by
so
sound.
But there's no question where you are when you're on that hill. It's that steep.
Exactly. Yeah. I know where I'm at all the time. Yeah. Except for I have gotten down the ditch and get swung around once or twice. And kind of had to shut the mower off and listen to see where everything was so I know
where
I was.
Where you were. I understand the problem. I've got a baseball field that we go to, and occasionally I walk around over there, and as you come out of the little woods to get over there, there's a picnic table, and so I'll set me a radio on the picnic table and turn it up pretty good and go do what I'm going to do. Then I can guide myself back to the path by the radio.
Yeah. I was up swimming one time, up to a park, and we was out swimming, and it's in a head pond, where there's a dam, and they had the buoy out there. So I had this little, what they call a water buoy. It's a radio that floats, and it's waterproof.
Yeah.
So I said to the lifeguard, I said, can I take this out and tie it out at the buoy? She said, what for? I said, well, I'm blind. I want to know where to swim to. I said, I'll swim out to it, and then I'll swim back to the sound on the beach.
Yeah.
I said, sure, go ahead. So I swam out and I hooked the water buoy on and cranked it up loud enough so I could hear it when I started swimming away from the noise at the beach. So I'd swim out the radio and then back, and so when we were done, I swam out and unhooked it and had the string on it, you know, and I tied that onto the loops in my trunks and was swimming back towards the shore. And this couple was there.
Yeah.
They said, "Gee, there's someone that can't get away from the baseball game." I had no idea what was on the radio. Wasn't paying any attention to it at all. And I said, "Pardon me?" And they said, "Well, you're listening to the baseball game where you're swimming around." I said, no. So I explained why I had did it, and they were totally amazed. And I said, wow, what a plan, you know, and had no idea you were blind. And you know, well, of course not. You know, I'm just out there swimming around like everybody else.
Just a guy out there swimming, but they thought you were listening to the baseball game.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's, you know, that's what being blind is all about. It's figuring out how to do the things you want to do without help.
Right. They say, what, real estate is location, location, location. Blindness is technique, technique, technique.
It's absolutely. I've got a friend that owns a house on a lake up there, and he takes a rope and ties it to his dock and to his boat, and he goes out and fishes, and then he pulls himself back with his rope. And
Yes, sir.
That works just fine. So it's up to you to figure out these things.
That's right, sir,
it sounds like your life is on track. You're doing well. You've never heard our show. We're on ACB Radio, and we're archived. We've done, this is mid-150s. This will be about 155 hours of this thing that we've done called Blind Like Me. So go and listen if you have time. And we'd love to have you as a guest maybe on the Blind Handyman show. We're a bunch of guys that sit around and have a cold beer and talk about how fast them trucks will go and about hammering nails and building things, you know?
Yeah.
And you've certainly been a good interview, easy to talk to, and life seems to be going well, sir. Blindness didn't bother you, and hats off to you. I admire you.
Blindness just gave me a lot of opportunity, man.
It did. It's people ought to be putting their eyes out, you know, just to join us.
I wouldn't wish this on anybody.
You don't think so.
No, but I wouldn't pass it up for anything either.
Robert, thank you, sir, and I'll let you know when this this airs. I'll give you a call on Skype or email you and let you know when we're going to run this, okay?
Sounds great.
Thank you, sir.
You have a good one.
You too.
Should have the same information concerning United States currency as their sighted brethren.
Now, if you think this is a great idea, thanks to the American Council of the Blind, there is something you can do.
You'll find a screen reader friendly site and an online petition waiting for you at www.moneyforall.info.
That's www.money4all.info.
Come be a part of history with the American Council of the Blind. www.moneyforall.info.
Visiting, actually, it's morning for us, could be any time for you. With a lady that I only know as Jenny. I don't even know your full name.
Jennifer Stopka.
Jennifer what now?
Stopka, S-T-O-P-K-A.
Stopka, what is that? What is that? Is that German or what is that?
My husband's a Polak.
Is he?
He is.
Is he there? But he doesn't mind you saying that, does he?
Oh, he doesn't mind me saying it, but no, he's not here.
My husband's a Polak. That sounds like a movie. Now playing at the Cinema 3, My Husband's a Polak. I love it. Anyway, you're having storms. What part of the country are you? Where are you?
Missouri.
Missouri. Big storms coming through Missouri this morning, huh?
Yeah.
Well, maybe you won't lose electricity again. I hope not. That would be not good in the middle of an interview. There's your jaws talking. All right, we've met only on Skype, and I think the first time you listened to either one of the shows was a week or so ago.
Right.
You had never heard of it. How did you get on our list?
Through Donnie Parrott.
Through Donnie? Oh, you know Donnie Parrott?
Yeah.
Our resident minister?
Yes.
Who keeps us all straight?
Yes.
who wrote that song, If You Don't Love Jesus, You're Going to Hell? I guess not. Anyway, we love Donnie. We've had Donnie on the show. Donnie has an amazingly good sense of humor for a man of the cloth. You know what?
Yes.
He's just kind of... kind of one of us. I mean, he acts just like a real person. Not that preachers don't, but anyway. Well, we're glad to have you on our list, and I think you bill yourself as engineer's wife. What sort of an engineer is your husband?
A design engineer, or Max would put it, mechanical engineer.
And so he works on big projects, like what?
Yeah, he designs industrial-size air compressors.
Industrial size, not little cheap air compressors like I have, but big air compressors.
Yes, bigger.
All right. Now, you were not, you have not been blind all your life. You were born fully sighted.
Correct.
Your childhood was spent where?
Throughout Oklahoma. My father worked for Southwestern Bell, so we tend to move every 3 to 4 years. But it was mostly Oklahoma City, Stillwater, Oklahoma, Enid, Elk City, Edmond.
So they moved you around every once in a while. Like my father worked for Nabisco, and they did the same thing with him. And you had no thoughts about blindness? It never, as a child, never crossed your mind, did it?
No. Mm-mm.
How old were you when you first realized you were in a problem?
6 and a half when I realized I had diabetes.
Oh, that's what caused your ultimately caused your blindness.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And at 6 and a half, you had to go on a different regimen than the other. You couldn't eat the big bars of chocolate that the other kids are eating, I suppose.
I could go trick-or-treating, but I had to turn over the candy when I got home.
And that's hard on a kid because kids don't understand, you know, They don't have any comprehension of diabetes and that sugar might kill them. They don't know that.
Right.
Okay, so at 6 and a half, your diabetes manifested itself, and you went through teenage, I guess, when you're 16, you got your driver's license.
Correct.
Started driving that car and having a big time.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. When did you find that you're totally blind now? In fact, you have prosthetic eyes, right?
Correct.
When did you...
October of 96, I started having eye problems.
Yeah.
Like floaters in front of the eye, and went to an eye doctor, and he sent me to a retina specialist. And after several eye surgeries and saying that he could save 85% of my eyesight, I was in the dark.
You were totally blind.
Yeah, as of February 12th of 97. Mm-hmm.
Someone, you would remember that if you could see and you woke up one morning and you were totally blind. That would be a day that would stick pretty firmly in your memory. I would think you'd remember that. And you thought what? You thought life's over? What's ahead? What did you think when you realized you couldn't see?
What am I going to do now? Who's going to want somebody blind? Am I always going to live my life with my parents?
Yeah.
And I went to a deep, deep depression.
In other words, who would want to marry a blind girl?
Exactly.
Who would be interested in marrying a blind girl? But I guess, of course, subsequently you found out that wasn't going to be a problem. They sent you to, I think, I can't remember where you said that, where you you roomed with this lady.
Blind Focus in Kansas City, Missouri.
Blind Focus in Kansas City. Now, what were they going to teach you?
They're a center that thinks they're going to teach you mobility, computers, cooking, how to read and write again.
You say that thinks they are. What do you mean that thinks they are?
Well, instead of treating everybody as an individual, they grouped us all together, and sometimes they had people there with just not blindness, but mental issues.
Uh-huh.
And so they would all make us have to learn the math and the reading and writing over again. And it was like, okay, I just lost my eyesight. I didn't lose my brain. I'm just here for computers and mobility.
I don't need to learn fractions again. I already know those.
Right.
But you were in a class where they were teaching that, so you had to sit through all that also.
Yes.
Okay. You weren't very happy with this Kansas City place, right? Did they teach you some mobility? They did that though, right?
Not very much, because they only had one instructor, and you maybe got it once every 2 weeks.
Boy, I don't know about mobility. I never was taught any mobility. I just, you know, swung the cane around in front of me, and if it hit something, I stopped.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what kind of an idiot does it take to know?
Right.
You know, and if you're tapping your cane along and you tap your cane and there's nothing there, you know you need to stop.
Right.
Because you're on the edge of some, I mean, it doesn't really take a rocket scientist to do mobility, but they train it and they teach it and then they get paid for doing that.
Yeah.
Okay, at this place in Kansas City, a kind of a funny twist happened in your life that you didn't realize was going to have such an impact on your life, but it did. Tell us about that.
Well, I was rooming with a lady and became good friends with her and found out she was from the St. Louis area, too. So we would come back every other weekend together, and we would all get together. I was dating another guy at the time. We'd all get together and go out, and her boyfriend would constantly flirt with me. And I thought, well, maybe he's just really outgoing and, you know, stuff like that. And, yeah, you know, I'm attracted to him, but I'm not going to come between them. And life went on, and me and Debbie stayed really good friends, and I moved off to Texas because, you know, I was back on my father's insurance, and he got transferred to Texas.
Uh-huh.
And I stayed in contact there, and then I went through kidney failure.
Oh, my.
And I did dialysis for 2 years, and it was getting pretty desperate, so my parents put me on the Madison, Wisconsin list, and I got my transplant 6 months later because I'm a rare blood type.
Well, you've had a kidney transplant on top of everything else?
Kidney and pancreas, yeah.
Good heavens.
7 years out.
and you're in your 30s, and your body's just falling apart, isn't it? That's
yeah.
The wildest thing I've ever heard. I didn't know all that, and so we'll talk about that in a minute. Anyway, this guy, you were dating another guy. Now, was the guy that you were dating a sighted man? Or?
Yes, he was. And that's the sad thing, is I knew him before I went blind because our fathers worked for Southwestern Bell together, and I didn't want anything to do with them then. And so I look back and I think, well, why did I want something to do with him then? I guess because I was desperate, and that's the sad part, you know? I mean, I did truly love him. I did truly learn to love him. But when I went into kidney failure, his attitude changed, and my dad got him with Southwestern Bell, and he moved to Texas, but I ended up leaving him.
But you say when you were a sighted lady, you didn't want anything to do with him.
Right.
But then after you lost your eyesight, you had a relationship with him.
Yes.
That's kind of different. It's well, you know, things change, attitudes change, he changed, you changed, who knows?
Right.
But anyway, this guy kept, your girlfriend Debbie's boyfriend kept flirting with you. So let's take it from there.
So after I came back to visit one time and went back home, he started calling me up, and I realized they really didn't have a relationship. It was more like roommates, and he stuttered to get his feelings out, and I just cut him off and told him the feelings were mutual, and he left Debbie and came up and saw me in Texas, and we went from there. He came and got me for Christmas and went back and stayed with his friends. And Debbie refused to sell the house, so Brian did a quick claim deed on it and gave up everything. Yeah. But she took everything of his. So when we got together, we started off with nothing. We were living out of an extended stay hotel.
So he decided that he liked you better than he did your roommate.
Right. Come to find out, they were basically just roommates, and he felt sorry for her. She would not cook, would not clean, would not do anything. She didn't know how to deal with her blindness.
And now, was she a newly blinded person also?
Newly to going all the way blind. She had RP.
Okay. So she had just really, really finally lost her vision.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So he decided he didn't like her, but he did like you. Roommate girl. Jennifer.
Yeah.
All right. So she, I think there was some lawsuits involved, some court action, wasn't there?
Yeah. She put a restraining order on us, and then the guys that we were staying with, Brian's friends, They were trying to break us up, so we moved out, and we tried to come back and get some of his stuff, and they wouldn't let us have it. So we put a lawsuit on them. They counteracted with the lawsuit. We went to Judge Joe Brown's show.
Now, who is Judge Joe Brown? I don't know that.
Okay, he is one of those TV judges, like Judge Judy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you were on that show?
Yes.
Did he make the final arbitration in your case?
Yes, he did.
And, of course, I think you have to agree before you go on the show to abide by his ruling, don't you?
Yeah. Correct. Mm-hmm.
And so did they bring up the fact that you couldn't see on the show? Did they mention that at all?
Yes, because Kevin and them put a restraining order on me for stalking them, and Judge Joe Brown asked him how I was stalking them.
Yeah, I'd be really. One of the things blind people would have a hard time doing would be stalking.
Mm-hmm.
That would be kind of difficult. Why am I hearing myself coming back now all of a sudden? Jennifer?
I'm not hearing you come back.
Oh, I'm hearing the echo. The old echo thing. Anyway, so you went to court and you were on television. And what was that like? How did they make you up or what?
Yeah, they do your makeup and stuff, and the producers try to really get you riled up and tell you to argue back and forth, and me and Brian just didn't, you know, feed into that. We said maybe two sentences, and the rest, Kevin and his boyfriend Paul and Debbie was there with them, were talking to the judge, and he got so mad that he awarded us what Kevin was suing us for.
So, it was a good outcome.
Oh, yeah.
I'll be done.
Enough to be able to buy our first house together.
You say it enabled you to buy your first house together?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll be darned. Well, do you have any idea where the ex-girlfriend is now?
Yeah, she's over here in St. Louis in Maryland Heights and living by herself in an apartment.
And the engineer married you?
Yes, he did. That's a funny story, too, because I was starting to get sick when I was staying up here, and we went back to Dallas, because that's where my parents are from, and my dad said, look, Jen, you're on my insurance. You need to come back home, or you could possibly get kicked off my insurance. Well, Brian started crying and proposed right there, and we've only been together for 3 months, and now we're going on 5 years. We went to the courthouse and got married.
So he put you on his insurance?
Correct.
And you didn't no longer needed your father's, I suppose.
Correct.
After that. Well, that's most interesting. But yeah, and so during all this thing, you had developed pancreas problems and kidney problems, and you're blind, and heavens.
Yeah.
Somebody's out to get you, aren't they?
Well, you'd think.
Well, you would think, but you have had a kidney transplant and a pancreas transplant, both?
Correct.
And you live a fairly normal life, I suppose.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We're building a 6-foot privacy fence right now, and I keep up the inside of the house and do some gardening outside, and I do some medical consultant still over the phone, and yeah. Still
you say medical consultant still. Were you a nurse before you lost your eyesight?
Yes.
That was what you wanted to be. That was your chosen profession.
Correct. I had just gotten my LPN and was working and going for my RN when the eyesight problems started.
Yeah, it's pretty hard to pursue a career like that as a blind person, isn't it? You couldn't do that.
No.
I don't really know any blind nurses. I think we do have a blind doctor on the list, but he went blind after he became a doctor.
No.
All right. Well, it sounds like your life is pretty well on track. What do you do for hobbies? You just play on Skype all day, don't you?
Oh yeah, you would think.
Well,
no, actually, I take kickboxing classes.
Really? How'd you get into that?
Through a friend. We wanted to start working out, and we start doing like kickboxing water aerobics. And then I wanted to do the real kickboxing class, so we do that once a week.
seems to me like your body would be pretty fragile for a
Actually, you know, it's not. My husband says that I grab him too hard.
Really?
I guess those steroids make you strong, but no, I'm not. I may be petite, but I'm not that fragile.
Really? Even after everything that's happened to you, that's a pretty amazing story.
Yeah.
And your health now, as far as we know, the kidney it's working, functioning. And
oh, yeah, real good.
Everything works except that little problem with your eye. You've got a little sore on one of your prosthetic eyes, as we all get that have those. It's so annoying. If I can't see, the least they could do is not bother me. They're not going to work. All right, well, sounds like your life's on track. We're going to go, and I'll be in touch and let you know when we decide to air this, Jennifer.
Okay.
Hold on just a minute.
Okay.
All right, a couple of interviews that we did last Friday with Skype, the telephone protocol. Of course, telephone to computer, it doesn't sound that good. It sounds like a phone. But if you do computer to computer and both of you have reasonably good microphones, it is a wonderful way to do what I do, and it's computer to computer. It's free. That's the good thing about it. $30 a year. Call anywhere in the United States or Canada. $30 a year. That's quite a thing. Anyway, I don't own any stock in Skype. I just like it. I just think it's a good thing because I can't get all you can eat long distance in my area, so this is going to be good for me. Anyway, we always need guests for Blind Like Me and for the Blind Handyman Show, so you can email us or you can call me, 936-634-9500. My Skype ID is philpar5, all one word, philparr5. That's my Skype name. My email is phil@philpar.net, 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 or philpar@consolidated.net. Either address will work, and if you'd like to be a guest, we'd love to have you. If you have a Skype thing, we'll do you on Skype. Thanks for listening. We'll do it again next week. Our show is called Blind Like Me. We appreciate you, and we'll see you. Bye-bye.